This is Rage, Radio Against Global Ecocide. Today on the show, Gail Dines of Stop Porn Culture. Music by Lila Glede, Dene singer and songwriter. This is Rage, building a community of resistance, one podcast at a time. Welcome to Rage, Radio Against Global Ecocide, coming to you from occupied Amiskwasi, Wiskaigan. I am your host, Seymour Life, and a special hello to all those working to stop porn culture. Gail Dines is a professor of sociology and women's studies at Wheelock College, an internationally acclaimed speaker, author, and feminist activist. I had the great pleasure of listening to her at Earth at Risk. She was simply brilliant in her anti-capitalist message and what is desperately wrong with our culture. We started by her talking about her latest book, Pornland, How Pornography Has Hijacked Our Sexuality.
People often ask me, why did I write this book? And there's a number of reasons. And I think really the most important is that pornography has changed so dramatically over the last 10 to 15 years. And in a way, as I say in my book, the pornographers have done a kind of stealth attack on our culture. And what I mean by that is like they've come in and they have controlled the discourse on sexuality. When you turn on the television, you watch MTV, you look at advertisements, what you see increasingly is a pornographic representation of women's bodies. That women's sexuality is being commodified, they're being reduced to sex objects, and they're shown as something to look at, to use, to abuse, and to leave, which is what really a commodifying anything is. It's for use, and then when you're finished with it, you walk away from it. So what I did in the book is to really explore how this sort of image of pornography, how the messages, the text, the codes, the conventions of pornography have now seeped into mainstream media. And what I'm also specifically interested in is how violent and cruel and debased pornography has become. Because often when I speak to audiences, and here I'm thinking of mainly women of all ages, and I would say men over the age of about 35 or 40. You know, when I talk about pornography, they have a very specific image in their head, which is often an image of Playboy from, you know, 10, 15 years ago, which is a naked woman in a cornfield smiling. And the question is, why are you so upset by images like this? Well, the answer to that is that clearly, you know, those were bad enough in the way they commodified and objectified women. But they are, you know, they were really the good old days compared to what we have today. Because, you know, but a lot of people don't know, who are not familiar with the landscape of pornography, is that if you type porn into Google, what you come up with is actually body punishing, hardcore, brutal sex. And this belongs to a genre of pornography known as gonzo. Now, gonzo in the industry is differentiated from features by the fact that gonzo is the kind of wall-to-wall, sex scene after sex scene pornography, where there's no storyline, no attempt at any narrative. Basically, what you get delivered is, you know, sex after sex, but it's a specific type of sex. It's a kind of very debased, cruel sex, with examples such as women being gagged with a penis, women being choked, women being called names, anything from bitch, whore, slut, cum dumpster, you name it, slapped, hair pulled, and just, you know, in everything you imagine, you know, to have making love attached to it, is completely disappeared. And really in pornography, the man makes hate to the woman's body. That's what he's doing, because all of those emotions one associates with hate, you know, disgust, fear, loathing, all of those things, that's exactly what you see in pornography today. And the troubling thing about this is that, you know, this is the most profitable part of the porn industry. This is what the pornographers say themselves, that they make more money from actually doing gonzo than they do features. And that wow. The average male alone, this is what he goes to. He does not go to the features, he goes to gonzo. So this is a very, very serious public health issue of our time that few people want to acknowledge, because I think if we really accept that images have an impact on how we perceive the world, if we really accept that, then we're going to have to accept the fact that we are bringing up a generation of boys on hardcore pornography. And, you know, what studies show is the first age of viewing pornography today in America is 11 years old.
Wow, yeah. No, I was just telling my daughters that I was doing this interview. My youngest daughter said, first off, she said, well, she's right. And then she said after it, I'm never going to get married, am I?
You know, how old is she?
She's 18.
She's 18.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hear my students, when we get talking about this, and that my students get a chance to stand back from the porn culture, with, you know, and they've been socialized in this, but when they really manage to stand back and look at it, and they really don't want, you know, to date men who are using porn or who've been affected by porn, you know, it's very lean pickings out there. It's very, very hard to find men whose sexuality have not been shaped. And I think the younger these guys are, the more likely their sexuality is being shaped by pornography.
So how does that, I mean, when you wrote the book, and how does that tie into the left and its thinking about acceptance or embracing of pornography? How does that fit into what you were just talking about?
Well, I have a really funny story. It's not so funny, but it was a few years ago. I was writing an article with actually Robert Jensen, and we were writing an article. It's actually called Why, you know, Pornography is a Left Issue. And I called up The Nation magazine and I spoke to one of the senior editors there. And I said to him, you know, we're writing an article about why pornography is a left issue, and would you be interested in looking at it? And that's all I said. And immediately he said, we don't believe in censorship at The Nation. I said to him, I never mentioned censorship. We're not talking about censorship. We're talking about analysis of pornography and why the left should look at it in a more critical way. And he couldn't hear it. He absolutely couldn't hear it. And then he said to me, he said, well, what about feminist pornography? So I said to him, let me ask you a question. Supposing I was calling you up to pitch a story about how the corporations control media, would you argue that it's an incorrect argument because of The Nation, for example, which is not corporate-owned? I said, just because you've got, you know, examples like The Nation or In These Times or Z Magazine doesn't mean to say that corporations don't control the dominant media in our country. And it's the same with pornography. You know, you might have some exceptions to it, but the reality is that the pornography industry is controlled by mega corporations. If it's not controlled by them, it's certainly linked to them. For example, we know that hotels make more money from distributing pornography than they do from actually making drinks from the bars. So, you know, it's a huge industry and it's tied into major corporations. Now, what really amazes me is, you know, the left, quite rightly so, has developed a really sophisticated understanding of how media shapes our reality. You know, we don't talk about Fox Media as if it's just a bit of fantasy and fun and we should ignore it. You know, quite rightly, we're very concerned that all of this stuff that's spewing from Fox is shaping the way that people think about politics, they think about the world, they think about left-wing and right-wing. We understand that. So my question is, why is it, if we understand the role of right-wing media in legitimizing and cementing and justifying capitalist ideology, why do we ignore the role that pornography plays in cementing and legitimizing and justifying sexist ideology? I don't understand how you can have a whole, you know, deep analysis about the role of media and somehow think pornography is the only form of media that has no effect, that is exempt from our analysis. So, I mean, I've always, you know, those of us who are anti-porn feminists, who are all, you know, left-wing and believing that, we're pretty disgusted with the left for its absolute failure to understand media and pornography, specifically, and obviously pornography, as a kind of ideology whose job it is to kind of shape the way that men think about women as a way to legitimize a wider system of oppression we call sexism.
Earth at Risk, you talked about left embracing pornography was actually quite dangerous. I wonder if you can go into that a little bit.
Well, you can examine, for example, PETA and their images about women. I mean, there was actually one in England, which really, I think, showed just how, you know, hateful it was. And I'm sympathetic to some of their arguments. You know, it's not like we're not sympathetic to some of their arguments about the mistreatment of animals, absolutely, and the commodification of animals. You know, I get that. But there was sort of a campaign that really caused a stir, which was a picture of a fur coat. And it said, it takes two dumb animals to make this, one to wear it and one to die for it. You know, the representation of women as dumb animals. And then, you know, the way they use Pamela Anderson, who has been kind of an icon of the porn culture. So they just seem to ignore that. And, you know, if we don't have the left fighting pornography, then I think we're really in trouble then, because you leave, you know, the war against pornography, the fighting of pornography, to a few impoverished feminists. And we certainly don't have the energy or the people power or the resources to do it on our own. And let me tell you how different this is. In October, I was in Norway to speak at the Social Forum, and I was giving a talk on pornography. And then afterwards, there was an hour's organizing session on what to do about pornography in Norway. And it was stunning. It was just stunning. About 250 people came to my lecture, and I assume that, you know, not many will stay to do the organizing because this is kind of the nitty-gritty work of change. And what was amazing was not only did everyone stay, but about another 150 people joined afterwards, all from different left organizations. We had the Farmers Union, we had the Housewives Union, we had youth organizations, all of them joining on to think of ways to fight the pornographic culture and pornography in Norway. And I'm sitting there thinking, God, this would never happen in the United States of America, you know, which is where I'm located, and I've been here for 20-odd years. And I can say the left have always fought us on this issue. We have got very few friends on the left.
Can you go into one of the how pornography has changed sexuality, but also go further in the commodification, the industrialization? I think that was the term you used, actually, in Rithorus, the industrialization of sexuality, and how that's really ruined a lot of things.
Well, it's interesting, because let's think about, you know, what pornography is, because often if I get up and talk about pornography, people say to me, well, you're anti-sex, which is so interesting, because what it is kind of a collapsing of pornography with sex. And my argument is, of course, the two are completely different. Pornography is an industrial product, and sex is a human desire, a cultural, you know, expression of emotion, etc. And I say in the beginning of the book, you know, if this book was about fast food, and I was critiquing McDonald's, talking about how, you know, it destroyed the environment, caused obesity, exploited its workers, nobody would accuse me of being anti-eating, because they would separate eating from the industrial product, i.e. fast food. So, I mean, it is equally ludicrous to call anyone who's anti-pornography anti-sex. We're not anti-sex, we're anti the industrialization and commodification of sex. And in fact, my argument would be, if you are pro-sex, then you absolutely have to be anti-pornography. Mm-hmm. You know, it's ridiculous to call yourself pornography and then call yourself pro-sex, because the two things are so different, and one actually, as I say, is actually causes the destruction of the other. So what I'm trying to get over to people is that in a society where, you know, every human need and want is commodified, where, you know, capitalism strips us of who we are, you know, and sells it back to us in ways that are almost unrecognizable, you know, this is one more way that capitalism has kind of wormed its way into our lives. And, you know, that was Marx's great insight, that capitalism will worm itself into every area of your life. And now it's wormed its area into sex. It's defining the way that we relate to each other sexually. It defines what intimacy means, because if you think of a capitalist society where one of the key points is that people are very much, you know, alone, isolated, divorced from each other, what better type of sex to have than pornographic sex? Because it fits in perfectly with this commodification of all of our emotions. It rips away human from human. It takes away empathy. It takes away compassion. It takes away connection. All the things that actually, you know, capitalism needs to destroy in order to make sure that can encroach in every area of our lives. Because the really bad thing for capitalism is if human beings are actually connected and think of alternatives to buying things to make themselves feel good. So I really do see it as connected very closely to the increasing capitalism of our culture and commodification of just about everything you can think of.
And also the thing that sort of popped in my head while you were talking to this is this recent bill in the U.S. to change or redefine the definition of rape. And how much do you think that's also ties into this commodification of sexuality?
Well, I think here you have kind of the perfect storm of the pornification of our society with right-wing ideology about women. And the two actually work very well together. I mean, you know, pornography is ultimately a right-wing ideology about women. It's, you know, ultimately says that pornography says the differences between women and men are biological. And that biological differences rests in women's genitals. That's the message of pornography. And that's the message really of the right, that, you know, by virtue of being women, we should be home, we should be having children, we shouldn't be out in the world because we're not as smart, we're not as astute, we're not as intelligent. And this distrust of women's sexuality, which is what pornography is about and which is what the right wing believe in. You know, that women really, according to the right wing, are a bunch of whores, which is why you have to domesticate them in the house. And the pornographers say, you know, women are a bunch of whores, which is why we should screw them as, you know, much as look at them. So it's a very similar ideology. And, you know, in pornography, there's no such thing as rape. Remember, there's very little rape pornography, because you don't have to rape a woman, because she's such a whore, slut, you know, cum dumpster, that she's willing to have sex with any man in any way, no matter how cruel or painful. And I think that's the kind of thing about rape ideology of the right, is, you know, how do you rape a whore? It's the same message over and over again. So I see it as a perfect storm, actually, of the two coming together.
There was one term that I really liked what you said, is that taste in media socialized. And I wonder if you can go expand on that just a little bit. It seems to be a whole series of things, but taste is in media socialized, and how much the media really does in a lot of different ways define our tastes.
Well, I mean, it goes even further than that. It defines even the way we think about ourselves and our bodies, you know, and our sexuality. I mean, one way in which I teach this in classes is I have the students read stuff on hegemony, which is, you know, Antonio Gramsci's concept of ideology. And, you know, which really started with Marx, because, you know, one of Marx's key insights was that any material system of oppression requires an ideology to kind of normalize the inequality. And that's exactly what, you know, capitalist ideology does. But it's the same, really, I think, when it comes to sexism. It's that here you have this, you know, an equal system whereby men have more access to resources, whereby, you know, the whole of the world, including globalization, rests on the exploited labor of women. So you have to legitimize that. You have to find a way to legitimize it. And the way you do is you have this ideology. And the best producer of ideology, without question, is the media, and especially the image-based media, because images are so powerful and they affect you in so many ways. So what we talk about in class, and which I think is very important for the students, and which seems a pretty, you know, profound insight for them, is to talk about how all these images that surround you constantly, these images of these thin, young, white-toned women, they become so normalized, and you're so hit over the head with how you should look as a young woman, that it actually seeps into that part of knowledge we call common sense. So you think that you want to look like this way because it makes you feel good and it looks good and that's who you are and it's part of your self-esteem. So you take this, you know, enforced ideology and then you sort of own it as your own. So you are so convinced that the reason that you do what you do, the reason you wax, the reason you, you know, sort of go on diets, the reason you wear these clothes is because they make you feel good. You chose this. And in reality, you know, you have been so shaped by this culture. And, you know, when we get into why women choose to do what they want, there's this whole big movement now in what's called third wave feminism to say, you know, it's all about choice. If I choose to do this, then it's feminist. Well, the reality is choice is only meaningful if you have real choice, which means that for a girl to look out in our culture, and to have choice, she needs to see multiple images of femininity and what it means to be a woman. And then she can walk through these images, these different representations of femininity, and she can select for herself any one of them or none of them, but most importantly, what makes sense for her in who she is as an authentic human being. But we don't have that. All you get stuffed down your throat is the, you know, Lady Gaga, Paris Hilton, Britney Spears, all of this imagery, so that there's no choice, so that when girls conform, it's ludicrous to call it a choice, because it's out of lack of choices. And I think this is a big mistake of the new, more, you know, sort of contemporary third wave feminism, is they don't really understand structure. They don't understand how choices as social beings grows out of a range of alternatives, and which we no longer have, which the media has shut down. So I think, of course, your daughters are going to argue that this is who they are, and they don't want to see the alternative, because they have literally owned that image of themselves through lack of choice.
I think that's an important one, because we have been fed this whole concept that we have choice. But I think that choice has been extremely controlled, and in a lot of ways.
Well, and also remember, it's a choice. It doesn't come from nowhere, because the choice to look a certain way means you have to spend a lot of money. You don't get that naturally. Yeah. It's a very kind of constructed, commodified image. So the most important thing, of course, is that, you know, the image of femininity has to be one you buy. You now buy femininity. You buy it in the clothes, you buy it through cosmetics, you buy it through shoes. It's not something that you have, it's something that you purchase. And then, of course, you take it on as your own.
Playboy starting the sexualization of commodities, and then how all the different industries that are now involved in that. Because there's a whole series there. I think you did pretty, from the hotel industry, credit card industry, everything else like that that's involved. Mm-hmm. And you go into that a bit more.
Well, I mean, first of all, because I want to make people very aware in the book just how much of an industry that is. I really start the book looking at 1953, which I would argue is the year that pornography became an industry, because it was the year that the first edition of Playboy hit the newsstands. And Playboy was really the first magazine to be specifically a pornographic magazine that's goal was to facilitate male masturbation, and it was the first such magazine that actually circulated in the mainstream channels of American capitalism. And what was interesting about Playboy, one of the reasons it became such a success, was because it taught men how to consume in the post-Second World War era. Because here you had a whole group of upwardly mobile, white, middle-class men who had this now, what was new, discretionary income. Because remember, it was post-Second World War, post-Depression. No one who had discretionary income before, only the very, very rich. And now there was more of a kind of democratization, somewhat, of that income, especially for white people. Mm-hmm. So they had to teach people, men, and how to spend. And this is what Playboy was so great at. It really taught them how to consume in order to be, quote, a playboy. So Playboy started it. Penthouse then came on the scene in 69 and Hustler in 73. And those three magazines really defined the core of the industrialization of pornography. And it was not really till the internet came along that the thing shifted so dramatically. So they laid the economic, cultural, social, political groundwork that allowed for the present day, you know, multi-billion dollar a year industry to flourish. So what I do in the book is I go into the history of those three magazines, the way in which the advertisers, you know, eventually backed Playboy rather than Penthouse and reasons why. And then I take it into the present day and really look at the connections of pornography, as I say, to credit card industries, to bankers, to real estate, to hotels, to the PR organizations. You know, the fact is as well that many, Time Warner and all of these organizations, you know, own distributors that distribute pornography, the way that at one point Rupert Murdoch was making more money on pornography than Hustler was because he had a, you know, satellite corporation that was distributing it. So what I try and do is trace the economic links, because I think that's the only way you can say to people, look, to call pornography as fantasy is ridiculous. You know, fantasy happens in the head. Pornography happens in the banks of international capital. Okay. That's not fantasy, that's reality. And it happens, you know, as a way to increase, to drive the profit motive. And that's what pornography is. You know, the pornographers are always looking for ways to increase niche markets, because they've got an increasingly bored and desensitized consumer base. Because they're using pornography so much, they are becoming bored and desensitized. They're looking for new, more bizarre things. And this is what's driving the porn industry, is always trying to find something to keep a jaded audience, you know, excited and aroused. And so to look at pornography as an industry, you have to understand it like all other industries, which are profit-driven, always trying to build new markets and always trying to develop niche markets.
I wonder if you can go into a little bit of what men can do about helping to stop pornography.
Well, we have, first of all, let me give you some resources that we have. We have an organization called Stop Porn Culture, which if you just go stoppornculture.org, you'll see it. It's you get onto our website. You can also go onto my website, gaildines.com, and there's resources there. Now, at Stop Porn Culture on the website, what we have is a video of a slideshow that a few of us developed, which we give out free of charge. People can download. And we're trying to encourage people to start going out and giving this in their community, which really is about raising consciousness as to the harms of pornography, really from a public health issue. One of the things we do, and we're doing this June in Boston, June the 25th, 26th, 27th, 28th, 29th, is we're having a number of training sessions. So we're going to have a two-day training session on looking at the theory around sexual exploitation, looking at the trafficking. That's a two-day seminar. And then attached to that, which people can do later if they want or just on its own, is an actual training in how to give the slideshow. We will be putting this up for more details on Stop Porn Culture in a few days. So if anyone's interested in coming to Boston, they should register. We'll have a registration form up there on the website. So another thing they can do is they should start reading Robert Jensen's books. Mm-hmm. You can go on his website, Robert Jensen, and he did a book called Getting Off Pornography and the End of Masculinity, or I think it was Masculinity, yeah, Pornography and the End of Masculinity. I would definitely recommend that they read that and they read anything by Robert Jensen on this topic, because he really talks about what men can do. And I think, you know, men for themselves, this is about men deciding to have some humanity in the world. It's about them refusing to collude with the pornographers. Because, you know, when those of us who've done a lot of anti-race work have talked about, you know, the answer to whites is to become what's called a race traitor. You refuse to collaborate with whiteness. Well, I think men have to become gender traitors. They have to refuse to collaborate with this masculinity. And, you know, they need to figure out ways in which they refuse to collaborate to be all these things that this patriarchal culture tells them they should be, and that they join us, the feminists, you know, the radical feminists who are fighting for a more gender-just, equal world. Because, you know, we have been left to do this on our own. Men have basically never really joined feminism in any great numbers. And what we really need is to start a mass movement that's going to really wrestle back the pornography, the culture from the pornographers. You know, we can't do this alone. And the truth is, you know, I don't know how we're going to do it, because I haven't got a crystal ball. But I do know in other countries that are starting to do this, that one of the things they're trying to do is raise consciousness as to what it means to live in a culture controlled by the pornographers. What is it going to mean for the children to grow up here? Because this is the key here. Do we want our kids to grow up in a porn culture? Do you want the pornographers to shape the sexuality of your children? You know, that's the key issue. Do you want them to, if you do, then fine. You know, this is what they're doing. But if you think that, you know, your kids have the right to own their own sexuality, and if you think we all have that right, then we're going to have to figure out a way to stop the pornographers hijacking our culture. Got most of the main points down, you know.
How do all these things fit together, and how is anti-pornography work part of that?
Well, I think anti-pornography work is actually not just about pornography, because you really can't talk about pornography without talking about capitalism. Start.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's a very truncated discussion if you're talking about pornography outside of capitalism. And I think all of this ultimately talks about the fact is that, you know, we are looking at an economic, a cultural, and an ecological collapse. All of it's coming together. And I don't think it's any accident they're all coming together. And, you know, I see it all as so intertwined. And the fight has to be on every level, how we are going to basically reclaim our world, mainly from the capitalists, you know, whether they be the pornographers or whether they be the polluters or BP or whoever. And so I see it all totally connected. And I also think that in a world, you know, increasingly where people are alienated and isolated, pornography is the obvious choice for men to go to for their sex. It's the obvious place. So this is all threaded through, it's all stitched together. And, you know, and as I say, you can't fight pornography without fighting capitalism. And you can't, and capitalism, fighting capitalism is about fighting the destruction of the environment and all of these things as well. You know, unfortunately, you know, it's not a simple, nothing simple when you come to social change.
No, not
at all. But I just want to say, I was on a radio station in Canada, and they said to me, you know, he said to me in the end, he said, you know, Gail Dines, aren't you really pushing a boulder up a hill? And of course I am, as all of us who are on the left and progressive are. We're all pushing boulders up hills. But, you know, what choice do we have? I don't think there's any other choice, because if you don't push the boulder up a hill, you know, you may as well be dead as far as I'm concerned. You know, that's the work of our enemies, is to make you just stop and in despair. And I mean, if you do that, then it's all over anyway.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. And, you know, people can feel free to contact me if they've got any more questions. My email is gdines@welock.edu, and they can get me to my website.
To shake, rattle and roll. I want to feed this challenged soul. And if I try, if I try, won't be that bad. I want to spread my dirty wings. I want to shake the dust off things. And if I cry, if I cry, can't be that bad. No. Listen, sister, you know how I feel. Listen, sister, you know I feel. And what's real is not scary. Yeah. smash the status quo. And if I try, if I try, can't be that hard. So you just sit and chill. Change your life? Could you brave the anger and strife? Would you speak when no one dares to say what is true? Sister, we are stronger than we know. So time.
Was Lila Glade with Listen Sister. Some people may not understand the connection of stopping pornography as an integral part of stopping industrial civilization. Jack Forbes puts it together quite well in this paragraph from Columbus and Other Cannibals. Quote, "The forest must be cut down because it is evil, pagan, almost satanic. Non-Europeans can be murdered or enslaved because they are tawny serpents, Indians, or children of the devil. Women can be raped and abused because they reflect sexual temptation and Eve's seduction of Adam. They are referred to often by macho males as broads, walking asses, cunts, vaginas with torsos attached, and pieces. Indian slaves were also called pieces by Columbus, piezas de chamas by Spaniards in the Southwest. A Hollywood movie where suburban husbands conspire to have their wives transformed into androids. Love-making and working machines. It's not all that far-fetched in that it reflects the reality in most authoritarian traditions." End quote. This is what industrial capitalism does. This is what industrial civilization does. It takes living beings and sacred connections and turns them into disposable pieces. This is what the Huitego does. It is a disease that infects millions of people around the world. It must be eradicated. I thought it fitting to have Lila Glade's tribute to the murdered and missing women of Canada take us out. This is Calling All Warriors. Remember, folks, the resistance needs you.
Town with a suitcase a mother gave her before she died. formed up a gate to say goodbye. The sun shone so brightly. Oh, it hurt to leave, but she had to try. Go to the city like her friends, but runners never plan that far, and God only knows where the journey ends. She said just one time to get some said her name like they didn't want